Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for taking time out of what most of us have is a busy schedule to share this next hour with us as we talk with the folks who are changing their lives and the lives of the people around them. And sometimes that circumference can get very large, all the way up to a global impact, and our guest today is no exception. Just a reminder that we do come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com, and we archive the programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. We're also rebroadcast Sundays from 3 to 4 p.m. at a2zen.fm. That's a2zen.fm. Now, this is the first Saturday of July 2012. We have begun the second half of 2012, and we're winding down to the end of the year, not the end of the world. So start getting that into your head, that it is not, we're not ending civilization as we know it, unless, of course, you'd like to, in which case you can take that somewhere else. But what we want to do is we want to continue on beyond the 21st of December, and we want you to continue to seek after your passion, your desire, the dreams, the hopes, the aspirations that maybe you aren't even in touch with yet. And hopefully, in today's program, we're going to help you to maybe find a way to do that. A lot of it has to do with the way you look at yourself. And that's a good question to ask you is, what do you say to yourself, whether you are, or how do you talk about yourself, whether you're alone, facing a mirror, or when you're amongst a bunch of people? Are you constantly putting yourself down? I hear a lot of that today. I hear a lot of, and here's the word that I love. Unfortunately, it refers to something I don't love. There's a lot of self-deprecating conversation, let alone thought, going on today in the world. Well, today we're going to see if we can't turn things around for you. My guest is Daryl Noke. He's the author of Mastering a Healthy Self-Image, the guidebook to real happiness and enormous success. And we'll get some definition of terms as well on that. Daryl, welcome to the program. It's great to have you on.
Well, thank you so much. I am glad to be here.
Now, you presently, as we are speaking, you are hailing from my old stomping grounds. You're out in the Scottsdale area to the east of Phoenix, Arizona, where in the months of June, July, August, September, October, April, May, and June, suffering through heat, and then more heat. And I understand you're going to be relocating to a much cooler climb, or I shouldn't say climb, because it's actually going to be closer to sea level and nearer to us as well. And we may have a chance to get together and meet and converse further about this. But you have put together a book. You have also some interesting little, well, they're coins. You've put together some coins to help people to work on themselves and maybe even pass these out to other folks to help them as well. And we want to talk about this whole aspect of a healthy self-image. Is that the same thing as self-esteem?
Yes, synonymous? In my opinion, it is.
Okay. How did this become an issue for you as far as focusing on self-image?
Well, it actually started when I was 1 year of age.
You remember that?
I don't specifically remember it, but I've had it told to me several times.
Okay.
At age one, I started running out toward the road. I'm the youngest of seven.
Wow.
And my older sister, she was 11 at the time, she came running after me. And as she got to me, she tripped on the sidewalk, and she fell and landed right on the back of my head. And she literally, of course, at age one, your bone is much softer. And so at age one, she landed on the back of my head, and she crushed my face into the cement.
Oh.
And so we were on welfare at the time. My father had left home and left my mother with seven children to raise. And so we couldn't afford to get my face fixed. And so at age one, I grew up with a crushed face. I got my first surgery at 16, but then I got a second surgery at age 40 and a third surgery at age 42. And so I grew up with an extremely poor self-esteem. You know, kids were no kinder back then than they are today.
Yeah.
And so I got a lot of ribbing about having a crushed face. And so I grew up with that, but I had the opportunity to learn how to overcome that. And I not only learned to overcome it, but I learned how to be extremely happy with myself and the world, so to speak. And when I retired a few years ago, after taking a couple of years off, I said, I want to go do something, but I want to do something that really means something to the world. And so I said, you know how to take a young boy with a crushed face growing up in the ghetto of Chicago and turn him into an extremely successful business person, but even more important, learn how to really enjoy himself and how to be happy. And I said, that's what I need to do. I need to take all the life's lessons that I've learned, and I need to go out and I need to teach the world those life lessons.
I find it interesting, and I suffered through similar circumstances going through school with the bullies, and I have to say that I don't know why I was surprised, but maybe about 5 or 10 years ago, I was watching the news, and all of a sudden this story came on about the subject of bullying. And at the time, I was maybe 47, 43, something like that, and I thought by now we'd outgrown that. I thought we'd moved on beyond that. And I was just surprised that we were still dealing with that same issue. But what I have come to understand is the bullies have an even lower self-esteem of themselves than those that they are bullying, or they wouldn't do this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I believe that that's their way of expressing their unhappiness with themselves. And they do it in a way to draw attention because they are so unhappy.
And a lot of professions kind of do the same thing, don't they?
They do. A competitiveness, and there's nothing wrong with competitiveness, but sometimes, you know, and I'm going to be just a little bit offensive if you will allow me, but sometimes people's ignorance doesn't stop them from opening their mouth before they think.
Well, that's true. And there is an old state, I forget where the quote comes from. You may recall. It is better to, what's the phrase? To be thought a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt.
Exactly.
So, obviously, you grew up, as many of us, many of those listening to this program, myself included, you grew up with adversity. You can put all kinds of names on it, you know, that you want, but that's just what it was. It was a challenge. And
exactly.
Yet it wasn't until, am I correct that it really wasn't until your 40s after these surgeries, after you started to see a different man in the mirror, that things started to turn around and you said, hey, this has to change for me, as well as you said before, wanting to help a change for others?
Well, that has some truth to it, but actually, even before those two surgeries, at age 22, my oldest brother gave me a set of Zig Ziglar tapes.
Oh, yes.
And at that point, when I started listening to Zig Ziglar, it really touched me. And then I became a student of human nature, and I literally immersed myself in the Zig Ziglars, the Napoleon Hills, the Earl Nightingales, the Dennis Waitleys. Oh. I mean, I literally immersed myself in all of that good, positive, healthy information. And literally over the course of the next few years, I changed my life dramatically.
You've been looking in my library of years gone by. Those are many of the people. As a matter of fact, I still have a Dennis Waitley tape cassette series, not CD, but cassette series that I used to listen to on occasion. And I was also a member of the Nightingale Conant program, to where I could order these different inspirational and uplifting kinds of authors and conversations, including Earl Nightingale. My favorite, I have to say, and I'm not sure if he was ever included in this list per se with the Nightingale Conant people, was a gentleman by the name of Og Mandino. And
he certainly was.
Yes, he has since passed, but I had the great privilege of interviewing him back in the 1980s, shortly after I had read and actually had recorded for a radio reading service back there in Phoenix, his book, The Greatest Miracle in the World. And it talks about, in this particular book, about a rag picker by the name of Simon Potter, who basically, as he puts it, picks up the rags of the humankind, those who either have been thrown out or have thrown themselves out onto the scrap heap, if you will, and have given up on themselves. And in our day and time here today, Daryl, there are a lot of people who are doing that all over again.
You know, I really, it's saddening to me to be able to make this statement, but I really feel like the people of America have lost respect for themselves.
Mm.
Not only have they lost respect for themselves, but they've lost respect for their neighbors as well. And, you know, it all, in my opinion, it all comes from self-esteem and self-confidence and self-worth. And if you don't have those things and you don't think that you need to build those things, you lose respect for yourself. And I believe we must take the opportunity to bring that respect back to ourselves, to bring that self-esteem and that self-confidence back to ourselves, because we need to change the world.
There are those who would argue the contrary, that there are too many people who think too highly of themselves. But that's not respect, is it?
No. You know, Zig Ziglar used to say that people that have arrogant attitudes, that, you know, he said that that was the only sickness that made everyone else sick except the person that had it.
Hmm. Interesting. They were a carrier, but they didn't catch it. Interesting. So when you go out today to, and I've seen you in classrooms, as well as to auditoriums of people, when you start out, obviously you tell your story of when you were one and so forth. Now, I'm curious, and I'm going to actually back up just a little bit. Your sister tripped on the sidewalk and fell into the back of your head, which then pushed your face into the concrete. How did your sister feel then, and how does she feel today about that?
Well, my sister and I have a very close relationship. In fact, we never really spoke about it. We really never focused on it. You know, my mother always used to say to me that I was a very special child, that I was gifted, and that I had a gift that I could share with the world if I were willing to work hard enough to have that ability to share.
Mm-hmm.
And so we never really spoke about it. We really never even talked about it, that I had this issue. You know, mm-hmm. When I was in school, then some of the school kids talked about it quite regularly, but at my home, we never discussed it.
Have you discussed it since?
You know, my sister and I have talked about it. You know, I do an average of 5 to 7 radio interviews a week. And so because I am promoting my message, so I am out there quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, I talked to my sister and I said, I'm going to be telling my story. So if you see some of these things that I'm telling my story, I want you to know that I, even though I've told the story and I'm going to tell it over and over again, I don't want you to think that I have any issue, because I really believe that having a crushed face, I could have looked at that and said, I'm never going to go anywhere in life. Mm. My father told me that on a regular basis, but I didn't. I said, I'm going to prove to the world. It gave me a drive to say, I'm going to be somebody, and I'm going to show the world that I am somebody. So I believe that that crushed face gave me a drive that I might not have otherwise,
mm-hmm.
and created significant opportunities for me in my life.
And obviously your sister and you and your sister are still close. I'm just curious, did your sister ever have a problem in that regard as far as feeling responsible, feeling guilty for this happening? Because, again, as you've described it, this was just an accident. This was something that
right.
it just happened. Nobody could have seen it happen. There was no malice or forethought. So I would hope that, you know, she didn't and doesn't to this day.
I don't believe she did, and I don't believe that she does. Like I said, we never spoke about it in our household, so I believe that that helped her not feel like she had mm-hmm. any responsibility, and we really never spoke about the act of the fact that she fell on my head and that I had a crushed face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just all grew up feeling like we were just normal, average people.
Yeah, it's it's funny. A memory comes to mind all of a sudden. My brother and I, little boys, in our parents' backyard, and I hurled a garbage can towards my brother. It hit him right in the mouth and broke out his front two teeth. Now, he was young enough to where the permanent teeth hadn't come in yet, but nonetheless, that's something that happened. They took him to the OR, or to the emergency room, and whatever was done, and he's grown up, and he's in his 40s, and doing well, and so forth. And we've never really talked about that. I mean, that was a time in our lives when there was a little argument going on, and one of us wasn't real happy with the other. But then we moved on from there. So, yeah, it's not like, oh, my gosh, what did I do to my brother? I mean, back then I felt bad, but, you know, again, you just kind of it's one of those things in life that you just say, hey, it's something that happens, and, okay, we'll deal with it and then move on rather than and I guess as kids, that's one of the very unique things about children as opposed to adults is that even maybe up to the age of 11 or 12, when we fall down, and you see this in young toddlers as well as young kids of 4 or 5, 6 years old, they'll fall down, they'll bump their knee or they'll scrape their elbow or their hand, and they'll suddenly start crying. And then, of course, then they get distracted by something and the crying goes away and they move on to something else. It's like, oh, that wasn't that big of a deal. And, oh, what's that over there? A pretty balloon flying in this, you know. Whereas we adults, we hang on and hang on and hang on to this stuff.
Yeah, you're unfortunately absolutely right that somewhere we turn that switch and we start dwelling on that. And we have a tendency, and, you know, it's an unfortunate tendency, to dwell on the negativity.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that I really like to point out is we've got to stop dwelling on that negativity. We've got to turn off that television set that has all that negativity on, and we got to start focusing on the positive aspects of life.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many things in life that are wonderful, and if we start focusing on those, we start remembering, and we start talking differently to ourselves and to others around us, we can literally change our world overnight.
Now, you talked about receiving these Zig Ziglar tapes and materials at the age of 22. So I'm curious about your earlier years as far as your spiritual or even religious upbringing.
Well, you know, there definitely was all of that there. My mother was very, very into that. And so we definitely went to church on a regular basis. She regularly spoke about those things on a regular basis.
And your father?
He definitely wasn't into that. And he definitely, you know, he would maybe speak about it in that he would tell us that we needed to do what our mother said we needed to do, but that was not his particular bag, so to speak.
Right, okay. And your other six siblings, in terms of their upbringing, you were all obviously brought up in the same fashion, and did much of this sink in or mean anything to you, or was this just, hey, Mom and Dad said we got to do this, so we got to do this every Sunday, and once it's done each week, then it's done? Or did you seem to feel there was a connection there for you?
You know, I have to admit that it was something I felt like I had an obligation because I was told to, and I didn't really feel the connection.
And today?
And I think that one of the reasons that I didn't feel that connection was my mother was very connected to it. My father was very unconnected to it. But yet, as much connection as my mother had to it, I saw my dad beat my mother till she dropped on the floor so many times I can't count. And I always came back and said, if you're out there, what are you doing to take care of my mother? She believes in you, and yet this happens almost daily to her.
Basically.
And so I lost that connection, but the one thing that I didn't lose is my caring for every person that I touch.
In terms of your book, which is Mastering a Healthy Self-Esteem, the Guidebook to Real Happiness and Enormous Success, I want to talk when we come back from our break, Daryl, about those two elements, real happiness and enormous success, both in light of what you have what you've shared with us as well as in your book, and what we see going on in our world today as is being labeled as real happiness and enormous success. We're going to continue talking with Daryl Noack, and we are talking about his book, Mastering a Healthy Self-Image. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story.
Tell me your story.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, along with my special guest here on the program, who is the author of Mastering a Healthy Self-Image, Daryl Noack. And Daryl, you use in your subtitle the guidebook to real happiness and enormous success. Let's talk about what is, in your definition, what is happiness?
Well, I believe that happiness is a contentment with you and your feeling of how you fit in the world, in society. And, so many of us think that happiness is the Mercedes-Benz that we might drive, or, you know, we're not going to be happy until we get a BMW, or we're not going to be happy till we live in a 5,000-square-foot house, or we're going to be much happier in life when we live in that 5,000-square-foot house, because living in my 1,500-square-foot house just is not a position in life that makes me happy. And, you know, we forget that happiness is the connection with one another. And the more we communicate with one another, the more we, you know, I really believe that the more you do for other people, the happier you become. We've all gotten so connected to the idea that that extra gold chain around our neck or that extra car in our driveway or that extra status symbol is happiness and excitement, where in reality, those are empty. They don't really fulfill us. You know, I'm a very heavy proponent of prosperity. But there's prosperity, and then there is exaggerated living styles. And, you know, we really don't need to have those exaggerated living styles. We really, truly find much more happiness when we do something for another person.
You know, you during these programs, as my guests speak, these images come into mind. And what just came into mind as you were sharing that, my wife and I just happened to be watching a documentary on BBC America, strangely enough, Daryl, about grizzly bears. Now, the reason why that comes up is because I'm constantly using the example of nature. Show me another species on the planet that lives the way that we live. It doesn't; they don't exist. And so these grizzly bears are living their lives summer to winter, winter to summer, doing what they need to do, actually quite happy, I would think. Matter of fact, this one scene, they were standing on the edge of this small little water drop-off, waterfall, where the salmon were spawning. They were trying to go back upstream, and so they just stood there on the edge of this waterfall waiting for the fish to jump up, and they just reach out and grab it. And then they'd walk away, and they would eat the fish. You know, and it was like, boy, if you could find a spot like that in life where all you had to do was sit there and wait and just jump into your hands, what a wonderful thing. Well, the bears didn't think anything of it as far as, oh, this is a great place or not a great place. Is, well, this is the place I am. Here they come. I'm hungry. Let's eat. We sometimes, I mean, I myself find myself, for most of my life, I have found myself saying that I've been in the right place at the right time. That circumstances in my life have just kind of turned out. I'm not saying that I was born under a lucky star, nor do I carry a four-leaf clover in my pocket or anything like that. So what do you think makes one person feel that way and another person saying, man, nothing ever goes my way? My best friend who lives in Phoenix has just gone through the most tumultuous last few years. Lost his mother maybe 4 or 5 years ago, lost his home due to foreclosure, lost his job, lived in his car for a few months. I mean, just one thing after another. And when he called me and we chatted, I said, you still live in your hometown and you have friends that you've made there. You need to go to them and say, look, I need to get back on my feet and I need some assistance. Can you assist me? And he actually did find someone who was willing to do that, who knew that he could be there for a few months. And I said, hey. And then he had also just found another, a brand new full-time job. Wasn't paying as much, but at least it was work. And I said, at least now you're on the road back. You've already hit the bottom and now you're coming back up. And he used to be very optimistic. What makes those two juxtapositions in people?
Well, you know, unfortunately, I believe it's the direction we've been given in life. You know, because so many people have had a tendency to be negative, they pass that on to the next generation, to the next generation, and the next generation. And some of us were lucky enough to start educating ourselves to say, we're not going to perpetuate that negativity. Mm-hmm. We're going to continue to educate ourselves to the point where we can pass on a positive, healthy, exciting lifestyle to our children rather than passing on that negativity. And I believe that direction and education really, truly is what brings that out in people.
Now, I left out one critical piece of information about my best friend, Daryl. He introduced me to the Zig Ziglar materials back when we were in our 20s. And yet, that's the road that he went down in the last few years. It doesn't, and there's part of me that says, it just doesn't seem fair. You know? What about fairness in life?
There is no fairness in life unless you make it.
Okay.
I personally believe that we all have to accept responsibility. You know, and I don't know your friend, and I certainly don't mean to be negative towards your friend, mm-hmm. but maybe some of the choices he made in life, you know, maybe he got caught up in a lifestyle that he perpetuated that particular mindset.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so many of us, you know, and we've had everybody from the President of the United States do things that should have ended up with some form of some punishment.
Mm-hmm.
But yet they got off free and clear.
Yeah.
And there's been so much of that not accepting responsibility. You know, the old saying is that if you get caught cheating on your wife, deny it, deny it, deny it.
Right.
And if you deny it long enough, then it becomes reality. They believe you. And I guess that my opinion is that if we get caught, we need to accept the responsibility and say, you know what, I didn't do what I knew I should have done, and I need to accept the responsibility, and I need to accept the responsibility for making myself happy, for my prosperity. I believe that every person in America right now needs to start a part-time small business, and let's start taking responsibility for putting this country back to work again. Let's not wait for the government. Let's not wait for anybody, any big business. Let you and I start today, mm-hmm. start a small business, put $50 into it, and just start with something that gets you passionate and work 10 hours a week doing that, and that will help us bring this country back.
You know,
I personal responsibility.
Absolutely. Well, and that's the dirtiest two words in some people's vocabulary is personal responsibility. I've often discussed the same subject with people, and I say, you know, either you are 100% responsible or you're not responsible. Kind of like a woman, she's either pregnant or she isn't, and you can't have it. You can't have it 50-50. You know,
right.
Well, the devil did this to me. Well, wait a minute. You know, my feeling is that God, the creator, whatever greater power that you might call it, gave you this life, and now it's up to you to do something with it. I mean, I've often used the analogy, Daryl, of an individual walking through a meadow, and he or she has their hands out in front of them cupped like they're trying to hold water in their hands, but they're holding, let's say they're holding their will, and they say, I just want to do God's will. I want to do God's will. And they toss it up in the air, and the powers that be, the God, the creator, catches this in his hands for the moment. We'll just go with that. And he's compressing it down into the size of a baseball, but tears streaming down his face because he's so moved that one of his creatures wants to do his will. And he leans back and he hurls down like a Nolan Ryan fastball this individual's will and hits him square in the head and says, then do something with the life that I gave you. You are not a puppet on a string being manipulated by forces you do not understand.
I like that analogy. I think that's awesome. Because that is just what I just said.
Yeah.
Accepting personal responsibility.
Yeah. So I want to talk further now about success. Everybody has a little different spin on it. And I want to get your take on what you see as success.
I believe that success is different for everyone. You know, not everybody has the interest in doing the things that I did in life. Not everybody has the interest in being Bill Gates. You know, look at Mother Teresa. I would consider her life an absolute glowing success. But she didn't make massive amounts of money. She gave of her life in such an unselfless way that she would be considered to be one of the greatest persons in life to me. You know, what is success for each person is something that they have to determine for themselves, but I believe that success is the excitement that you have every day for living your life to the fullest. If you've done that, then you're successful.
It has been said that Edison was asked about the 990 different versions of the light bulb, if those were all failures. And I'm guessing this is correct. And he replied, "No, I just found 990 ways that the light bulb doesn't work."
Absolutely.
And they weren't, but they weren't failures. And everybody equates. They want to go the dual route. Okay, it's either success or failure. They want to go that route.
We haven't learned to talk to ourselves in a way that serves us. And that's one of the things that I really feel that I need to speak about is we need to learn to talk to ourselves in a way that serves us.
Where do we start?
You know, that is a great question because this, in my opinion, is the beginning. I have a little card that I put on my mirror 35, 40 years ago. I made it up myself. And as a matter of fact, I pass this card out to anyone that will ask me for one. I give it to them for free. But this little card that has on my mirror in my bathroom for so many years simply says, I like myself. I love my life. I'm excited. I'm happy. I'm healthy. And I add brightness to the life of everyone I meet. And I look in the mirror and I say that to myself every day of my life.
Now, you still do that
today.
That's
where we need to start. I do.
Tell us, we're going to come back to more specifics about mastering a healthy self-image. And again, it's the guidebook to real happiness and enormous success. But I want you to talk about these special coins that you came up with. First of all, what are they? What do they say?
Well, on one side, it says gratitude coin. And on the other side, it simply says, I am grateful for. And then that's left to you to answer the question. And I tell people, I had the good fortune of designing this coin, give or take, about 7 years ago. And I did it because I'd had a lot of challenges in life, and I tell everybody, you know, challenges are learning experiences. And so even though I have taken five companies, national and international, and generated more than $3 billion in my lifetime, I have filed for bankruptcy 3 times in my life in order to keep getting back up, going back after it again, and continue to grow as a human being and continue to become a better human being. And so challenges are learning experiences. And I used to joke with people, you know, because I had my second surgery at 40, and so throughout that early adulthood, I would joke about my face and I'd say, you know, I am so hard-headed and I am so determined that I am going to go where I'm going to go. And that's why my face is a little flat. I keep smacking my face against the wall because I'm determined to get where I'm going. And so I always wanted financial success. that was a yardstick that early on in my life I really felt I needed to have. And so I would continue to say to myself, you know, boy, you know, by the end of this year, I'm going to get to this next goal in life, this next plateau of life, and I'm going to really be happy then. And then, of course, you get to that plateau, and then you set some new goals for yourself, and then I'd say, boy, I'm really going to be happy when I get to this next plateau. And so one day it hit me, and I said, you know what? You have to learn to live in today and be excited about today as much as you're as excited about going forward and finding that next level of success. And you're cheating yourself if you don't have that excitement for today as well as the excitement for tomorrow. And I said, I need an anchor that will remind me every day to be more grateful for my day today, be more excited for my day today. And I designed this gratitude coin, and I said to myself, if you touch this every day, it will remind you to be grateful. And being grateful will make you a happier person, and being that happier person will change your life. And it did. It absolutely did change my life to start carrying this gratitude coin with me. And it changed my life so much so that I said, I need to give the rest of the world this gift that this coin has given to me. And in the last 7 years, I have passed out more than 18,000 gratitude coins.
Wow. Wow. And you get around, too. I've seen some of the places that you've been. If you've just joined us, Mastering a Healthy Self-Image, the guidebook to real happiness and enormous success, author Daryl Noack. And this is from the True Wealth University, shall we say. I want to share something really quickly here before we go on. Be happy. Be healthy, be content, be empowered, and go out with that radiant smile and shine to the world, because now you've found true wealth. You can also receive these gratitude coins or a coin. All you have to do is visit the website, which is truewealthuniversity.com. That's truewealthuniversity.com. It's spelled just like it's supposed to be. That's an opportunity for you to share in what Daryl is basically he's created here for you to help you to continue on. And I know gratitude is a real big issue with a lot of folks in terms of our program and our guests. They talk about that all the time, one of the biggest keys is being grateful for who you are, where you are, what you currently have in your life. And then it helps to propel you forward, as you've just stated, to maybe go after the bigger prize, if you will, in terms of your passion, your desire, your dreams and wishes and hopes and aspirations. And we certainly encourage you to do that, and we encourage you to check out the website, truewealthuniversity.com. You're listening to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. My guest is Daryl Noack. He is the author of Mastering a Healthy Self-Image, the guidebook to real happiness and enormous success. Daryl, when you decided, and I guess I should back up once again. I tend to do that. I get ahead of myself here. Is this your first book?
Yes, it is. I did write a couple of other books, but I only marketed them and only made them available to the real estate industry years ago, and so I don't really consider those, you know, widely available books.
Right.
This is my first widely available book.
And how long did it take for you to codify what you've shared with us in the last 45 minutes or so down into ostensibly 245, 46 pages?
It took me about 8 months of... I actually wrote twice as much as what you've read in that book. But I had to pare it down because I knew that, you know, some things I repeated myself, mm-hmm. but some things I just needed to pare down and get a little bit more exacting in what I had to say and the way I said it to come down to something that would be more readable, that people would want to be excited about finishing. You know, if you've got a book that's 2 inches thick, sometimes it intimidates people and they don't want to even start. So,
now, I haven't read War and Peace yet, and I probably will never read it. I've seen a little too much of it on the news. I think I figured out the general premise of the book.
Right.
There's larger sections of war than there is of peace, and but that's a whole other subject for another program. I'm also curious as to you've been received in schools and a lot of different places, but I noticed one particular piece that I saw. You were handing these gratitude coins out to veterans. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that was quite an experience. When we think about when we get goosebumps because we get excited about something that happens or that's happening, that was one of those moments for me. I'm a daydreamer, and I believe that daydreaming is the start of all greatness because you have to dream before you can achieve. And so I daydream a lot, and I was daydreaming, and again, it hit me, and I said, you know what? It's almost Memorial Day, and what a day for me to go out and do something that I can touch a lot of people that sometimes have been forgotten. And I literally decided on Memorial Day I would go to the services here in Phoenix, and I would start passing out gratitude coins, and I would start telling service members, I want you to know that I appreciate what you've done for our country, and here's a gratitude coin so that you will have this and be able to touch this and remember every day as you touch this, someone told you how special you were because you did serve our country. And I gave every one of them, I said, I would like to give you one so that you can touch it every day. Because I tell people when I give it to them, I say, this coin has magic in it. If you touch it every day, it reminds you to be more grateful. Being more grateful makes you a happier person. Being a happier person changes your life. And if you want the magic, you've got to touch it every day. But I'd also like to give you a second coin so that you can pass that magic on to someone you're very grateful for in your life. And so I passed out to more than 500 veterans gratitude coins on Memorial Day.
A lot of us in this work that we are doing to change the world, there are moments in which we feel as though, what's the point? Nothing seems to be changing. Have you ever hit that particular wall in recent times?
I'm very fortunate, Richard. I'm very fortunate that I've not done that. You know, it doesn't mean that I haven't had some challenges, that mm-hmm. I haven't had to take a deep breath and say, I've got to get back up and go do this again. But I've been very fortunate that I've been so determined that I've educated myself to the point that I know that that does not serve me to have that attitude. To get to that point in life, I know that doesn't serve me, and I have to stay away from that. Mm-hmm. And so I choose not to go there.
Tell me about how important, I'm going to use the word, discrimination is when it comes to who you surround yourself with.
I think it is absolutely paramount. You know, I have had a variety of obstacles in my life. You know, early on, as I mentioned, we were on welfare. We literally grew up in the ghetto of Chicago. But I knew that I could not. One of the things my mother always said to me is she said, never let anyone else bring you down to their level. You set your own standards of life for you, and you live up to those standards. No one else's, your own. And so that gave me a foundation to be able to say, I cannot spend time with people that want to bring me down to a level that does not serve me. And I truly intend to be a superstar in life, and so I choose not to share my time with people that are not interested in being superstars also.
Tell me what you mean by superstar.
You know, again, Mother Teresa was a superstar. Mm. You know, as an example, you know, we all think of superstar as all of the glitz and the glamour that would go around with whatever's going on in life. But I believe that when I go to a restaurant and I choose to give a gratitude coin to a young lady that has had just a great smile and a great attitude, and I tell that person, I'm giving you this gratitude coin because I want you to remember that someone told you that you were special, that you had this great attitude, you had that great smile, you know, and here's this gratitude coin that will remind you every day that you touch it, that someone told you that. That's an act of a superstar. You're looking to help another person feel special, and that is what makes you a superstar. Not because you do things to fill your personal life. You do things to fill another person's life. You do things to make other people feel special for just a moment or for a day, or in my case, because they get to carry that coin for the rest of their life. Hmm. That's a superstar, when you think of others more than you think of yourself.
Now, you're certainly welcome to use that answer once again as I ask you this next question. Who is Daryl Noack?
Well, you know, I'm a happy, excited human being that we have so much greatness that is going to happen in the next 20 years of life. I am so excited to see the technology, the advancements. You know, certainly we all know, you know, because you can't get away from knowing that we're having some challenges in the world today. But if you do some research, you do a little studying, you can see that the advancements of life are so exciting, and we're right on the edge of so much life that I'm excited to get up every day to see all of the new great things that are happening in this world.
And though we've spent the last 50 minutes talking about this, I'll ask you to sort of codify it down. What do you hope to and want to achieve through the work that you're doing?
I intend to change the world.
Oh, I like it.
I intend to change the world's attitude toward themselves, towards one another, and I intend to help people learn how to smile more every day, how to help another human being feel more excited about their day, even if it's just for a short period of time. If we can touch enough other people, we can change the world.
There are people listening. There might be an individual who is listening saying, you know, Daryl, I completely agree with you. I hear what you're saying. It resonates with my soul, and I really want to do this. But because of the challenges that we're all facing, I'm working in a place that is just not serving me. It's bringing me down, but I can't walk away from this because I don't have something else to walk to. What would you say to that person?
Well, we all know that the world is in an unfortunate situation right now. And so there aren't as many opportunities as there would otherwise be. But my first response to that person is, I don't buy that story. You can start a small business right here, right now, and you can start doing something additional to what you're doing, and you are the only person that can allow negativity into your head. If I do not allow people to put negativity into my mind, then I won't have it. And so that's the point. I've got to come back to that very same thing. You have to accept responsibility that I am the only person that can bring me down. And if I'm allowing other things, other situations to bring me down, then I have no one to blame but myself. Mm. And so if you're in a position that you feel like is not serving you, do something different, as in start educating yourself. Get as educated as you possibly can and do the very best job. Even though you don't think you like that job, you do the very best job you can at that job. You educate yourself. You become the very best at whatever that is, and you will start to climb the ladder of success many times more than if you say, this is a crappy job, I'm going no place, my life sucks, and you change that conversation with yourself and say, this is a wonderful position because it gives me the drive to go somewhere else in life. And I need that drive in order to take myself to the levels that I believe that I should be.
A lot of folks have read and listened to many of the people that you have mentioned in the context of our program. I'm going to drop another name here, the late Dr. Leo Buscaglia, incredible individual. As I was growing up, my parents introduced his work to me. I wish that I had been interviewing at the time and had a chance to sit and talk with him, but some of the things that I've listened to him say in some of his video presentations as well as audio materials is just extraordinary. As far as, I mean, they called him the love doctor. It was wonderful. But there are people who are listening who want to write a book, and yet they hear people like a Leo or a Zig Ziglar or the Wayne Dyers or the other folks that have mentioned, or even the Daryl Noak, the Noaks of the world, and they say, well, but you guys have already said it, you know. So what's the point of me writing my book?
I love that question. Because I've had that asked of me several times in just my beginnings of what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, you know, what you have to say has been said hundreds and thousands of times already.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, you know, you're right. But if what I have to say the world already knows and is already doing, then something's wrong, because the fact of the matter is 97 out of 100 people die broke on a fixed income. So if they already know it and they're already living it, something's wrong. We know that they may have heard it, but they're not living it. And so more people like me and you and whoever is thinking that they need to write a book, we all need to be speaking this message many more times than it's being spoken right now, because the world really needs it even more today than they did yesterday.
Hmm. So I get that you're very optimistic. I am. You're sort of gung-ho about the future. Even when you look at the challenges that we face today and what those challenges might mean for tomorrow, have you any answers or suggestions to the powers that be beyond what you've already shared as to how we can change the world for the better under the current challenges that we're facing?
Well, you know, I always step back and I say, even in the Depression, when we were worse off then than we are today, the world came back. But I believe that the world has become more self-centered today than we were back then. And my suggestion to anyone is we must lead by example. And, you know, we have to think of our neighbor as much as we think of ourselves. We can't just fill our pockets and not help my next door neighbor. We have to take care of each other, and we have to stop being so self-centered.
That's another of the messages that we're getting in these last months or years that we've been doing this program, is community is vital. It's absolutely vital.
It is. It absolutely is. And, you know, I believe that I'm dramatically happier as a human being the more I help my neighbor than putting another different, larger, bigger car in my driveway.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that I'm much happier helping, you know, as an example, one of the things that I'm doing now as part of my community service, you know, you spoke about the fact that I'm doing a lot of school functions
mm-hmm.
as part of my community service, and I have more than 100 schools from coast to coast that are using the gratitude coin in their classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
But every week now, I'm going to 55-plus communities and talking about a lot of the things that we talk about right now, and I'm giving gratitude coins to all of those seniors. And, you know, I get excited when, you know, as an example, I was at a 55-plus community last week, and a young lady that was 102 came up and spoke to me, and she said, "I really believe that that's why I'm 102, is because I've always had a good attitude, and I've always felt like I wanted to find the goodness of life. And I really feel like you're doing great work by continuing to spread this message."
Mm.
That's fulfilling.
That sounds like success to me.
It is.
Daryl Noack, I want to thank you so much for spending this time with us, the author of Mastering a Healthy Self-Image, the guidebook to real happiness and enormous success. This has been a lot of fun, and I hope that one day soon we'll be able to do this in studio as well.
I look forward to it, Richard. I believe that you have a similar library to mine, and I would love the opportunity to sit and talk with each other.
That would be great. The website, once again, is truewealthuniversity.com. If you would like to receive a gratitude coin, visit that website. It'll show you how to do that. And I'll leave you with that quote that I read earlier. Be happy, be healthy, be content, be empowered, and go out with that radiant smile and shine to the world, because now you've found true wealth. Daryl Noack, once again, thank you. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Until next Saturday, love to all.